Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, "There's a fight going on inside me, and it's a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It is anger, envy, sorrow. It's full of regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority. It lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other, though," he continues, "the other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, full of serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, truth, compassion, and faith. Now this same fight," he tells the grandson, "this same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." The grandson sat there, he thought about it. He asked the grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee just simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Lord, it's so hard living this life, a constant struggle each and every day. Some wonder why I'd rather die than to continue living this way. Many are blind and cannot find the truth, 'cause no one seems to really know. But I won't accept that this is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to let me and my people go. 'Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me? I wanna be free, totally free. I'm not gonna let this world worry me.
Wake up, goddammit!
Just all depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, ¿qué tal? Oki, namaste, and welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties. We're live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. It is April 27th. Holding down the other half of our host and duty, some call him the Lions Historian, others call him Unc. I just simply call him my best friend because he's my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O? How you doing tonight?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey. One.
Sorry, inside joke there. You know, it's all good, man. It's all good. You know, look, I'm loving what we do, whether there's 100 or the cast of millions.
Millions.
There you go, my man. You know, I'm just grateful, thankful, and blessed that we're doing this together. So, you know, it's all good, man. You know, I'm feeling all right. How you doing? I think my focus is more on you than me.
Oh, man, I'm good, man. I had a lesson today in judging people. You ever want to test? You want to, you know, you'd be like, I don't judge people. You want to test that theory? And if you, this only works if you're a bowling fan, whether you're good or not. But if you want to test your, you know, to see if you're a judgmental type person, just go bowling and watch other people approach the line when they ball, you know, when they bowl. Look at them, how they hold that ball. Look at them, how they approach. What was that they did? Did they even put their thumb in the, what are they doing? I had to stop. I was like, whoa, hold on.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Well, you remember those days, man, when we used to sit around drinking coffee, eating donuts, and taking everybody's inventory. So
oh, man.
I know that. It felt totally justified doing it. So I know that what you speak of. But you're right. There's no better test than hanging around at the bowl.
You know, so if you ever want a test of your patience, you know, drive, right. You know, just get in the car and drive. If you ever want to test of you judging people, then go to the bowling alley and watch people approach the line. Hilarious. So I say all that to say I had a chance to go bowling a little bit. You know, felt good. I'm feeling good. You know, that's why I asked you to set up everything. So thanks for taking
care
of
me. Okay. Yeah, man. All right. Outstanding. I hope you did well.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, man, but I'm finding myself, I didn't use the Pro Slides. I didn't use Cousin Marty's Pro Slides. Those that are not familiar with the Pro Slides or what we're talking about, we do have a show where we talked about entrepreneurs, given our Cousin Marty Beller, the inventor, creator of the Pro Slide. Hopefully you can go back and check out that episode. But I didn't have my Pro Slides on, man, so I was sliding all over the place, man. I look like a kid with his new dress shoes on, man. I'm flying up and down the lanes, man. It just got to the point where I was just kind of, you know, just laughing at myself. But, you know, it was good. It was cool. You know, my best game was a 164, I think. So, but anyway, man, it was a good time. It was good.
Man, you just like two spares from being up in the 80s every time, man. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I just try to make sure I don't leave a lot of open frames. Like that one game, I only left 3 open frames. But one of the open frames was in the 10th frame, so it didn't really
well,
matter.
That's half the game right there.
Right.
Yeah. That's like, you know. Man, that's like getting to the edge of the runway and running out of gas, you know.
Oh, man.
All right.
Yeah.
Right on, man. Okay. Well, looks like we're going to have a flow easy night tonight, man. It doesn't look like we're going to have all the chatter and clatter that bounced in on Monday. And so, you know, nice and easy, easy peasy. So it's a good time to go ahead and do your due diligence, man.
Right, absolutely. You know, because I know that, you know, there are listeners out there. And for those of you that are listening, we just like to remind you a few things, as we do each and every show. The first thing, we want to make sure that you've got something to write with. You got a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, a post-it note, a marker, the back of an envelope, or dad's favorite, the back of a napkin. I don't care what you got. We just want to make sure you got something to write with. In case you have any questions, any comments, you don't forget anything, you got something you want to share with us or the listening audience, we'll make sure you don't forget anything. So grab that pen and paper. And, of course, you're probably asking, well, Will, you said that I can share How do I do that? That's a great question.
That's a great question.
Well, let me tell you. Glad you asked. Let me break it down to you. There's numerous ways that you can get in touch with us and engage with us. One way is that you can call in directly, like talk shows. Our number here, I'm sure you got that pen and pad, paper and pen handy. Our number here is 516-453-6094. I'll say it again for you. That's 516-453-6094. And press 1 on your keypad. That'll put your number in the queue. And Dad and I will bring you in as soon as we can. So another way you can engage with us is through the chat room directly on Blog Talk Radio website, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect. That's the Greenhouse FX, the letter FX. And with your free Blog Talk Radio profile/account, you can just jump right there in the chat room and talk with Dad and I directly. And, of course, there's always Facebook, right? Ye old trusty Facebook. As you can also ask any questions or comment in the Facebook event page directly there in the discussion tab. So, yeah, there you have it. I'm glad you asked those questions, ladies and gentlemen. Keep them coming.
Well, I asked you what kind of show this is going to be.
Well, I gave you a warning. I went bowling, so, you know, thought that might help.
Right. Well, that's good therapy, man. Yeah.
Mhm. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Mm-hmm. So how you doing, man? How are things down there in your continued journey?
Man, I'm counting the days, you know, and I can't do anything to slow them down. So I have to move into acceptance mode, you know, and just accept the fact that all good things come to an end. Or all good things lead to better things. You know, I guess
right,
that's
right
the other
on.
Way to look
Amen.
At it, right?
Right
yeah.
on, right on.
And, you know, even though Monday was only a couple of days away, I'm still overwhelmed by how, you know, our type of news just is relentless. It just, you know, it just doesn't pause. I mean, I know the war is going on, you know. I mean, you know, terrible thing it is, you know. I love Edwin Starr's song back in the 60s, you know, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. You know, what? How did that one line go? It's nothing but a heartbreaker, you know, only good for the undertaker. You know, man, I mean, that's the kind of songs I used to listen to in the 60s. Man. You know, some hard lines there, but, you know, but truth, you know. So, you know, yeah, this war, you know, this war that's going on, it, you know, it's what this world does, you know, when it can't agree on something, it declares war. You know, it's what this country, what this world has continuously done, especially through the stretch of our lifetimes, you know, in the lifetimes of our immediate elders. So, yeah, that, you know, and that's dominating, you know, the political scene. Then we got the issues, you know, going on in this country that are dominating the political scene in this country. You know, Texas recently, you know, upheld a ruling that forbids abortions in the state. Mississippi is in line with the Supreme Court in whatever its appeal is, that if they win, then that'll strike down Roe versus Wade. And then, you know, and then the other things equally important, like Tennessee has removed all boundaries regarding marriage, so anybody at any age can get married. Crazy, man. I mean, it's just, you know, this part of the world. I mean, like, you know, one minute we're saying, you know, no abortion, you know. Next minute we're arresting people left and right for child abuse. And then there's a state that says anybody can get married at any age. Yeah, man. I don't get it. But then again, I guess I don't need to. And then there's also the issues about COVID. You know, and even though the cases are on the rise, you know, people still, we're tired of masks. It's like Biden's fault. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. So, you know, but other than that, right, how did you like to play, Mrs. Lincoln? It's just crazy, man. So,
wow, where did that come from? Hey, I sorry to cut you off. So I'm a little concerned because I've got a lot of noise here, and I'm not sure if that noise is coming through my microphone. So if it
not at all.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. If it does, let me know.
I'm also concerned because I was told earlier that there's a lot of clipping coming from my end. So let me know if I start, you know, breaking up, not laughing, breaking up, but not coming through clear. So you said, where did that come from? That's an old joke, you know. After a person gets through complaining, then the other person says, well, other than all that, you know, how did you like to play, Mrs. Lincoln? It's like, you know, forget the fact that my husband was assassinated. Forget the fact that the country's in turmoil. Yeah, okay, we understand. But did you enjoy the play? It's kind of what this country does, man, you know. On one half, you know, everything, you know, one half of the country is burning up. The other half of the country is drowning. And Congress is still arguing about climate control. So, you know. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's business as usual in this, you know, in this crazy part of the world that we live in. And in the meantime, it's the things that we focus on, you know, and the things that we focus on are usually what, man? The kind of topics that are day-to-day but sometimes slip past people's radar screens, and before we know it, history has come and gone, and we don't know how we got here. That's what I love about this show, that so often we remind folks of history.
Yeah.
You know, we remind folks, you know, that there were things that happened before we showed up that have a lot to do with what we're dealing with today, you know, and it's called history, you know. And I love it when, after making a statement like that, there's like a hush. Yeah, nobody says anything. You're like, yeah, okay, so what, man? Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, if we don't know some parts of the history of this country, then we really don't have any right to complain, because we don't know what the hell we're complaining about. You know, and all too often we're just complaining because immediate needs aren't being attended to. So without an understanding of history, you know, our immediate history, our immediate needs are not history. But we complain as if our immediate needs are, you know. No, there's a connected dots that I love about this show, that it doesn't take a whole lot of effort, just the commitment, just the willingness to just look back over the last 300-400 years. And it won't take a whole lot of effort to see, oh, so that's how that started. Yeah, you know, that's how that started. And it's amazing what one can find out along the way. You know, it's just never ceases to blow my mind. You know, like I thought, you know, but before I start spinning out, man, go ahead. You know, you got any?
I was just thinking, like you said, 300-400 years ago. And I know, well, I don't know, but I would assume that the majority response would kind of like, damn, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But you know, now I'm thinking about, you know, like let's go back to when you were growing up. Let's go to the 50s, let's say, right, the 60s. And then you talk about history 300-400 years ago. I would guess to say that wasn't the same type of reaction, and that while engaging the history, you know, it's like, where's more? You know, and it wasn't that long ago, and how come these changes haven't happened? It's just, I'm just guessing, because I didn't grow up in that age, you know, and you can probably let me know. But I mean, we're talking, what, you know, 60 years, and it's just really interesting how the need or the engagement that we used to have about history is changed now. And maybe it's just because of the technology, you know, and it's probably, you know, just so right there at our fingertips that, you know, we probably take it for granted, blah, 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 you know. But I'm just, it just hit me just listening to you talk, you know, and 300 to 400 years ago and how we've connected the dots. I'm like, yeah, it's really not that long ago, really,
right.
Because,
right.
You know, it, time and space and all that relativity stuff is really not that long ago. But to be 400 or so years ago, you know, it's not really the question that it was so long ago, but why hasn't things changed, you know, more? You know, you would think by then certain things would have evolved or would have changed. There has been evolutions, there has been changes, but why are some of these things that we're talking, I'm talking like from a Black American's perspective, why have these things not changed? They look different. Maybe that's what it is. You know, they kind of look different, but it's still the same bullshit. Excuse my language. So I don't know, man. I'm just kind of tripping a little bit, I guess.
I'm not sure I'm in agreement with how things look. I think mm-hmm. the perspective has to be, you know, in alignment with the culture. So we talk about this, like the 1776, just throwing that out there, as the jump off place for, you know, American democracy or government as we know it to be, defined by the founding fathers. Okay. But knowing that what they founded had nothing to do with anybody other than a select few white, rich, land-owning men, you know, the oligarchy of America, they had all the power. 6% of the total population dictated everything. So using that as a pivotal place of recognizing, well, who wasn't included, then it's a matter of tracking to see, okay, when were the ones who were left out finally brought in? All right, so that means we go to, all of a sudden we lop off almost 100 years and jump to the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, and that's like all of a sudden Black people became visible, you know. Black men in the sense of having the right to vote, but white women didn't get the right to vote until 1929. So now we're moving into the 20th century. And then Black women didn't get all-inclusive rights until 1964. So now suddenly we're talking about 60 years. You know, so it's all a matter of understanding what this zoo called American democracy is really about. You know, not everybody's history is the same. And even though American history may be inclusive of everybody, the history of everybody is very different from those who dictated social policy back in the 1700s. You know, and then we're not even talking about, you know, those native to this country. You know, I mean, like their history is not even a part of dialogue. So when does their history, who was here before everybody else, when does their history start? And what does their history look like? You know, so it's I think more about the convenience of being lazy. You know, this country is lazy when it comes to history. This country is lazy when it comes to knowledge. This country is lazy as hell when it comes to education. You know, this country has just lulled itself to sleep and it's just become so spoiled. You know, it's almost like that, you know, who is so used to having everything his way, you know, like from age 1 to age 9 or 10, that when it starts moving closer and closer to them teenage years, you know, it's so spoiled that it thinks the whole world is just here for their own convenience. And then when you start trying to impose rules upon that spoiled teenager, it does just what it does. It rebels. It rebels against the very fiber of what it's supposed to be a part of. So you have this spoiled child rebelling vehemently against the theme and the idea of democracy as outlined in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. But people only want to talk about those two pieces of parchment to satisfy their own greedy needs, you know, and that's when suddenly the real history of it hits us right smack between the eyes, because that's when we realize, wait a minute, these things were written for a very select body of people who laid down a policy that was to serve everyone else from that moment on, you know. And it's what we don't hear, what we don't talk about, what we don't question when the news hits. Instead, we look at everything from right now. But like, even going a little bit deeper into what you said about, you know, a change and the question about, oh yeah, a lot of things have changed economically. You know, technology has definitely changed. Hell, in my lifetime, I've seen, you know, the television become almost obsolete now, you know. Yeah, when people have everything they need in the palm of their hand.
Wow,
you know?
Yeah, wow.
You know, when that was, you know, that was the bomb, man, back in the late 40s and early 50s, you know. And so, you know, it's not like there's something new that is waiting to be invented. It's like, no, all the things that happen are just being improved on. But that's change as we know it. Not so much the marvel of technology and, wow, the telephone. Wow, the stoplight. You know, wow, you know, the television. No, it's like those miracles just don't happen anymore. Now it's, you know, all wrapped around the cell phone. You remember what that original car phone looked like, right? You know, that big old shoebox of a thing that weighed about 10 pounds.
Right. With the bag and battery to go with it.
Yeah. And you had to connect it to the phone, to the car when you climbed in, and you had to disconnect it. Else that bad boy wasn't going to be long for this world if you didn't disconnect it and drag it into the crib, you know. It's everything, you know, but laptops, man, I remember laptop used to weigh 30 pounds, you know, and now it's something comfortable in the lap, and it's even been reduced smaller. Now you can do just about everything on your cell phone that was supposed to be the modern convenience of the laptop. So all these, you know, trinkets have served laziness, but the thing that hasn't changed, you know, the thing that is still the argument of the day, you know, is social unrest. That has not changed. The same issues, just served up differently, still exist, you know, and there's nothing that the Constitution, there's nothing that the Supreme Court, there's nothing that the president can do about that, since the dialogue is all based on what party has the power. We only have a two-party system. I know people say, well, you got the independents too. Yeah, well, you know, right on. The independents are only going to serve one party or the other, but it's not going to serve itself. You know, that's just not the nature of this form of government that we live in. Maybe there's another form waiting to happen, but right now, you know, it's Republican, Democrat, and independents just waiting to decide what side they're going to be on. You know, so, you know, here we are. You know, in the meantime, the very fiber of this country, you know, is falling apart. Our educational system is shot to hell. You know, those who have exclusive rights to education would disagree. Of course they would, because it's spoiled. They used to having it like they wanted. They used to having separate but separate. Got nothing to do with separate but equal. It's separate but separate. And that's what they're used to. And they can't understand why people would have an issue with that. You know, this form of government has a hard time owning its history. So because it has a hard time owning its history, it still presents the same arguments to justify its ignorance. You know, this country does not agree with civil rights. And people need to quit acting like it does. It does not. There's a clear line drawn in this country. And it's white people on one side and everybody else on the other. You know, that's the nature of this country that has not changed since it developed itself. What's a trip, for me anyway, is when I start taking a look at, well, how did it get to be that way? you know. Do I need to take a breath now, man, so you can say something? Because I'm kind of spinning out of control here.
No, in
my rant.
I want to see where you're going. No, that's cool.
There's a movie called When We Were Soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a war movie, and you know, it's one of my favorites, but it's a war movie. But the thing about it, okay, you know, but the thing about it was that it's the first real conflict it's the first historical context of a battle in Vietnam where it was the first time American soldiers engaged the Viet Cong as a fight between them, not as Americans being supports to others, but it was like the first real engagement between American soldiers and the Viet Cong. And the thing about the movie, though, it starts out with the writer's narration, and he says, to tell this story, I have to start at the beginning. And then there's a pause, and he says, but where does that begin? You know, and that's kind of like what happens when we get into these episodes and we start wanting to take a look at how things got to be. And then it's like, okay, this is where it started. No, this is where it started. No, this is where it started. It's like, wait a minute. You know, I always thought it was just this, like, you know, what's all the rest of this stuff is about? Oh, that's called history, Bill. That's the thing that you never learned because it was never taught. You know, we've learned a fragment of American history. We've only learned the convenience of American history, just to satisfy the people and keep their mouth, you know, and just shut them up. Okay, just take this story and just go with it, and just leave the truth alone. So it's like this country is based on this myth, and I mean myth in the way of explanation. It's based on this myth of this, you know, great democracy. Well, it is for the select few. That's the story that just had never been told in its, you know, in its completion. So what was it, 2 weeks ago? We set the course on taking a look at, you know, how did America become white? You know, what or the context of what is the white race? You know, how did, you know, what's white history? You know, we talked about at first Negroes, you know, and, you know, how did Africans become Negroes? And, you know, like the French have France and the English have England and the Germans have Germany and Mexicans have Mexico and Canadians have Canada. But where is Negro land? You know, so how did this race of people become a race of people when there's no land that claims them? Because they stopped being Africans, so what, did they become Negroes, you know, on the ocean somewhere? You know, is it the sunken city or the sunken land of Negroville that we don't know about that hasn't been discovered? But remember, we started taking a look at that, and you remember it went on for a little while, getting to the that place of acceptance of, you know, where Negro then, you know, transcended into black. But still, just taking a look at, you know, that history, the question never really was satisfied. So, you know, where is Negro land? There's no such place. So how did Europeans become white, and how did America translate that into being a race? Man, I thought it was just a matter of taking a look at, you know, the term white race or white people, you know, entered major European languages in the later part of the 17th century, you know, but in the context of a racialized slavery and unequal social status in the European countries, meaning there's a matter of understanding that this European concept of white or white race or white culture has to do with privilege, you know, and it's a separation of one aspect of culture from the other. It's not like saying this is who we are. It's a matter of making the difference, you know, solely about color. So, fine, okay. So that still doesn't explain how it, you know, translates into American culture. And man, you know, I thought I was on to something, you know. And then I messed around and looked a little deeper, like, where does the beginning begin? And that took me on a hell of a joy ride. You know, now, we all know about pilgrims, right?
Right,
right, Will? I mean, the first thing you think about, well, I won't put you on the spot by asking you, but the first thing I think about when I hear pilgrims and the Mayflower, I think Thanksgiving. You know, pilgrims came to America to bring us Thanksgiving. That's kind of... You know, that's the short version of you know.
I got long white socks and black shoes and turkey
with buckles, shoes with buckles, right?
Shoes with buckles.
Yeah,
right,
long
right.
pointed hats. You know, and everybody sitting around the dinner table. You know, good old George. I mean, a good Norman Rockwell painting, right? You know, big old 30-pound turkey and
with
Indians,
Plymouth Rock
you know,
right there.
Yeah, and the Indians are happy, and the people. So, you know, that's the myth of Thanksgiving, you know. And yeah, then, you know, we heard some dirt, you know, like, well, you know, they brought disease, you know, to the Indians, and you know, and things got ugly. But we really don't go any farther with that. We just kind of leave it at that. Well, wait a minute, what was life like? You know, as it continued to develop, it's like, well, we don't need, you know, we went from pilgrims to democracy, you know, and the Indians were happy. Those that were tame, you know, we don't really, well, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm, I don't know, maybe it was different for you, but for me in history and going through school, there was no dialogue about the shifting currents in American society. Okay, pilgrims showed up. People were already here. Maybe some teachers would say, you know, and they really had a hard time adjusting to this country and its rough terrain. And it was the Indians that saved them by showing them how to plant corn and how to blah 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 blah. And then they celebrated this wonderful party by having this great table that everybody ate from. And that seems to be where the story stops. And then we just fast forward, you know, we do this kind of a little quantum leap or this American two-step, and we go from pilgrims and Indians and Thanksgiving to American democracy. And it's like, but how did we go from that to that? I don't know about you, but I was never told anything about that time in between. Were you? Will, are you there?
Yeah, no, it was, you know, they miraculously made it through to the New World and interacted peacefully, if you will, with the Indians and built, you know, and built and grew and grew and grew. And that was it. You know, and wasn't a lot of
interesting
stuff, you know.
Yeah, I didn't get much of the last part you said. Either you're breaking up or I'm breaking up. But yeah, so we're pretty much in agreement. It just wasn't
much of
anything that explained the in between. We just went from pilgrims, Plymouth Rock, engaging with the Indians, learning how to live off the land, having a wonderful banquet, and then somewhere in there was born American history or American democracy.
Right, we knew that.
We knew that they
built new buildings and constructed railroads, but we didn't know, you know, about how they acquired land and how they were able to build these railroads, stuff like that.
That came long after what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the time between 1691 or 1619 and 1776, you know, this, I'm just talking about, you know, there's no conversation about that hub of time that shifted the course of American society as we know it. You know, that's all I'm talking. I mean, it's like, I don't know of any American history that taught children about the where the beginnings of this government really lies. So anyway, my point is, I just want to use a term called the Mayflower Compact. You know, do you know anything about the Mayflower Compact? I'll tell you right now, I never heard of the term, the Mayflower Compact.
I heard it back in school. I'm sorry.
For real?
Yeah.
Did you really?
But I just don't remember what it is now. I heard something back when I was, I don't know if it was in school or at Upward Bound, but I remember being younger and hearing about the Mayflower Compact.
Okay, it might have been in Upward Bound. Yeah, but I doubt very seriously if you learned it from McDade or St. Cotilla. You know, or De La Salle for that matter, but I can dig you hearing it from Upward Bound, because that was kind of what Upward Bound was about, you know, and that's when, you know, we started thumping our chests about.
That was a book, right?
Well, no, I mean, it may be a book that was written about it, but no, the Mayflower Compact, and how it influenced 400 years of American government is where I wound up dropping off to when I was still trying to understand the beginning of the white race in America. And since its signing on November 21st, 1620, there it is, the Mayflower Compact has become a continuous part of American history. While most of us have not a clue about its existence, more or less, you know, its importance. So the Mayflower Compact, you know, was really the key ingredient that led to our form of government as we know it. Now, I know I wasn't taught anything about this when it mattered. I might have, you know, like maybe some learned about it, you know, after, you know, black folks got angry enough about being denied history, because that's what we did in the 60s and 70s. You know, we started investigating things. That's what African American studies were all about. So, you know, it was this great umbrage. You know, black folks were tired of being excluded from history. So we started, you know, attacking everything historically to understand, you know, what it was that we were left out or excluded from. So now we know pretty much the story of the Mayflower. You know, it set sail. I mean, I know about it in general, but I don't know about it in relation to government or dates. So the Mayflower set sail September 1620 from Plymouth, United Kingdom. Okay, so that kind of then tells me, wait a minute, there was a place called Plymouth that they set sail from? So maybe that's how the name Plymouth Rock came to be. You know, maybe that rock was synonymous or symbolic of this, here we plant this rock and this country will be built on it. Now, that's kind of scriptural. You know, what Jesus told Peter, you know, that you're the rock that I'm going to build my church on. So, you know, maybe that's how Plymouth Rock came to be. All I know is that I'm tampering with this history and my imagination is saying, So, anyway, the Mayflower having set sail, it landed in Massachusetts. Not Virginia, which was his intent, which was his aim, which was his course. The Mayflower was supposed to land in Virginia, but it landed in Massachusetts. Now, I wouldn't have known, you know, my hat from a hole in the ground as far as what the Mayflower was intended to do and where it wound up doing it. It just came to America. You know, as far as what I understood, I knew nothing about, you know. Well, no, it wound up where because the waters were rough and the travel was difficult. It was thrown hundreds of miles off course, so it landed in Massachusetts, not Virginia. Now, people might think, okay, so what? It was a navigational snafu. What's the big deal here, Bill? Well, then you have to understand those who were on the Mayflower. I just thought it was pilgrims. What did you think? Did you know it was pilgrims and a bunch of other people?
At first I was just thinking it was just them, you know, but but now I realize, no, you know, they had workers or slaves and stuff like that, right?
Who else was on that? You're doing some side research now?
No, man. The only thing, look, it's funny you say that. The only thing I was checking, I'm like, why did I say it was a book? Because I'm thinking of Before the Mayflower. And I'm like, not
the
Mayflower Compact. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait, what was the name of that book? So I was just trying to clear that up.
Yeah.
So who else was on the boat? Who else was on the boat?
Well, workers. Merchants, as you said, you know, they. But the thing is, we'll break it down. But it was 102 people on the boat, all right, the Mayflower. Now it was made up of merchants, craftsmen, workers, indentured servants, and get this, orphan children. Now, I know I ain't never heard nothing about that.
No.
At no time, nowhere, you know, that amongst the crew was orphan children. You know, all told, there were 102 passengers, of which only 41 were pilgrims. So who the heck were the pilgrims? Obviously, there were a group of people other than those who, you know, who were on the boat. You know, so, you know, what made them different than everybody else? Well, it was because they were the ones who, they weren't breaking with England or anything like that. They just, you know, had made a contract with this group called the Virginia Company to seek a better life in the new continent, you know. And the contract was for them to come here, was to establish a colony, and, you know, they wanted a better life here. So they were sort of religious separatists, but they didn't really break with, you know, England as such. There was just the issue of religious freedom that they sought. So they really came here under this contract to set up this colony and split the goods or the profits with this Virginia Company. You know, so, you know, I guess the way to break it down, you know, they, although the pilgrims were pretty much set on wanting to separate from the Church of England, not everybody on the boat was in agreement. So all the other people on the boat really weren't about separating from church. They were fine with all that. They just saw an opportunity, you know, to have a new life. No, I love it, to have a new life in America. So here's where the issues start, you know, taking on a different flavor. Since the Mayflower landed in Massachusetts and not Virginia, there was this other group that weren't pilgrims that the pilgrims called strangers. That's what all these other people, the merchants, the craftsmen, the workers, the indentured servants, and the orphan children were called strangers, you know. And even though the pilgrims were outnumbered by the strangers, the pilgrims were the ones who, you know, they had the contract. They had the leadership. They had, you know, they had all of what was necessary to even begin to make the trip. So they realized they had blown off course. They realized they didn't land in Virginia with the contract required, because that's where the Virginia Company was. But they landed in Massachusetts. The strangers, you know, felt that the contract that they had signed up under was null and void. So it's like, you know, we're no longer your property. We're no longer, you know, part of your cargo. Since we didn't land where you said we would land, since we landed somewhere else, you know, we're free to go as far as they were concerned. So here was the problem. This was all happening before they even got off the boat, you know. So it's like the pilgrims were faced with this dilemma. Like, damn, you know, we can't let all of those who are necessary to help us establish our colony just leave. We got to bind them to something. So they did what people do, you know, under the leadership of, you know, I'm sure you remember the name William Bradford. You know, he realized that if nothing was done, you know, to calm, you know, the waters of the demand for freedom that the strangers were making, you know, and if they did that, then the journey to America that the pilgrims set out to do, you know, it was going to be dead. It was going to be dead in the water, literally, before they even set foot on the land. So the pilgrims gathered up as many of the strangers that they could, you know, set a pact with the strangers, not all of them, but the majority of them, you know, and they came up with a sort of like a set rule of law. You know, they drafted a rule of law, and it became a binding contract that the majority signed. So when they got off the boat, everyone was held to this new set of laws that was written right there at that moment that determined what would be right and what would be wrong as far as what the settlement would then live by. But the thing was, it was only the male, you know, populations by and large that both drafted and signed this. The women were not allowed to sign it, and I would assume that the children weren't either, you know, but definitely not the women. You know, I'm all but certain not the children. And so here it was, a select few then at that moment dictated what the rest would have to live by. The agreement would later become known as the Mayflower Compact, although none of the pilgrims ever referred to that the bill that they come up, that law, the bill of laws that they came up with as, you know, the Mayflower Compact. That was just something that, you know, probably the Virginia Company came up with. But there was other things that were going on at the same time that would explain how all of these little bits and pieces began to come together, you know, and that's going to be, you know, the second part of this. You know, maybe next Monday we'll go more into detail, you know, and talking a little bit more about how the compact, the Mayflower Compact, in turn influenced the writing of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. You know, and it's like, again, understanding that it was just a select few white male individuals who did all this, and it was all designed for profit. So, you know, hopefully the picture is beginning to come into focus, and hopefully I wasn't, you know, too rambling to not be able to follow. And hey, what do you think?
No, I'm looking forward to hearing more. It's a trip, and you know, because you, it's just the way that you bring things back around. It's like you throw it up in the air, and it's like you watch these things go up in the air, and it's like in slow motion, right? And you're like, oh, okay. And then you just talking. It's like you take these pieces, like, okay, this goes here. This, while you're talking, you know. And then when you finish, next thing you know, you realize, oh, he done connected some dots from what he threw up
connected
in the air.
Connected some dots, man.
You know, and he's, you know, while you're talking, you're moving this piece here and you're moving this piece there. You know, it's like, oh, that's where he's coming from. That's the point he's getting at. You know, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. So the Mayflower Compact.
Influenced.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's to me, you know, it's just like what we did with Manifest Destiny. It's like, this is the history of the history. You know, it's like, you know, it's always these layers underneath. You know, but still for me, it's like, okay, we got 1621, 1619, 1624, you know, and then we go, you know, fast forward 150 years later, we got 1776. But what about those native to this country? What was their history prior to this history? And what happened to them? What kind of adjustments did their form of government have to take? You know, what did their people have to adjust to? You know, as they were being nudged out of their lands, you know, well, that's also covered in what not covered in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution as far as any kind of reparations. But it's sure covered as to how those who founded this country as we know it justified what they did, you know, by what they called the Indians. And it's like, you know, that's the beautiful thing. You know, it's like America's always been able to characterize its enemies, whether it's Indians, you know, I mean, man, if you ever wonder what, you know, America's thoughts of Indians, well, I just look at the Cleveland Indian logo, You know, that's pretty much, you know, how the cartoons and every other thing derogatory could be used to, you know, to just, you know, defame, you know, the characteristics of Indians, you know. Well, we also did it in World War II. You know, let's make the Japanese, let's make them caricatures. You know, let's distort, you know, their features, and let's turn them into something we can laugh at. You know, we're not going to even talk about, well, no, we need to talk about how it was done with black people. You know, how let's make this caricature out of black people. You know, let's make them look like anything we want them to look like, so we can feel disconnected from them, superior to them, and laugh at them. You know, and this is what, you know, white, you know, supremacy has always done. So it's like, wait a minute, Bill, you're saying white supremacy? Yeah, what else can you call it? Yeah, so, you know, it's just something to see how this developed, how this took form, you know, and it helps me to understand why this supremacist attitude still exists and why white people have such a hard time dealing with it. You know, it's just amazing and troubling to me that people of color, that this isn't an everyday conversation among people of color, and it's not a clear statement coming from Congress anytime somebody black or somebody of color has an open microphone to speak from. You know, it would have been wonderful if Obama, President Obama, had allowed himself, you know, the privilege of his position to start educating people on the issues of race in the country by using history and not popularity, you know. But that be said, I just wanted to take a quick minute to mention this brother. Let's see, where is he? Abraham Bolton. Did you hear about this brother? The first black man to serve in the White House as a Secret Service appointed to be, you know, a protector of a president. First time it ever happened that served as in the Secret Service in 1961 under Kennedy. His name was Abraham Bolton. And it would be great if we could just make that a mark of black history and leave it at that, right? No, you know, America being what it is. Only hearing about the brother now, you know, many years later, because Biden pardoned him. So it's like, wait a minute. Let's throw some shit up in there and see where it lands again. You know what you mean? Biden pardoned him. You know, I mean, he was the first person of color to serve on the Secret Service under a president, Kennedy. So what did Biden pardon him from? Well, they pardoned him from what it comes down to. He was pardoned for opening his big mouth, and he paid the price for it. You know, my man, I mean, look, before we even talk about that, what kind of brother grows up in the kind of environment that allows him to believe he can join the Secret Service? I mean, that just, he was born in 1937. What the heck, Will? You know, where did his imagination take him to even conceive of the idea? You know, so now if a person understood that, they would have to understand this brother would show up in the White House tight. He ain't about to say anything out of color or do anything out of place, because he, born in 37, you know he knows the rules. And to be on the Secret Service, you know he's going to show up spit polished and shining.
Yeah, you would,
right?
Yeah, you would think so. You would think so.
Yeah. So he showed up just that way, you know, and the first thing that he noticed just after a few months of being in this detail, that there was obviously the usual, you know, racism going on directed toward him, but in some ways directed toward Kennedy too, being the first Catholic president.
Hmm.
But there was what his complaint was to his superiors was an atmosphere of laxity, that his colleagues were just lax. they was, you know, they were just lax. I mean, call it lazy, call it indifferent, but they weren't spit and polish. They were like, you know, kind of laid back. So anyway, his complaints led to his being accused of selling Secret Service files, which led to, which led to his eventual trial and conviction and being placed in federal prison for 36 months before some witnesses finally rescinded their testimonies and said they were coerced into accusing him of what he did. So, I mean, like he's 87 now, he's still alive, you know. And so he got his pardon from Biden, not from Nixon, you know, not from Clinton, not from Obama, but from Biden.
So how long was he in?
So now, 36 months, you know. So he's in there like 3 years, 3 months, you know, 39 months, I'm sorry. So he went in and what was that? He went in something like June of 66. So I'm assuming came out in September of 69, you know, somewhere around there. You know, but herein lies the rub. You know, he was later in a documentary that revealed that what he was talking about was a concern about a plot to assassinate Kennedy. Yeah, man, it's just, you know, so the way he was rewarded was to be in prison. You know, of course, Kennedy was assassinated, right? And I guess that's the kind of thing you do with history. You know, when it's so shameful, you just kick dirt on it and hope nobody uncovers it, you know, because it's so embarrassing. You know, so this brother paid the price. But now, he had three children. Two of them died, and his wife died. But his youngest son, who was two when he was sent away, tells the story that, you know, when my man came out, that he was still able to put a life together that led to a marriage that led to three children, and all three children were very well taken care of. And my man, you know, Bolton, you know, says the thing that held him together was his faith. And then he knew eventually that the Lord would set him free, you know, not free from prison, but free from the conviction. So that's what Biden's pardon was. So you pardon a guy, he's 87 years old now. You know, we're talking about, you know, most of his life having to be lived under this cloud of questioning. How do you pay that back? I mean, is that good enough to just give him a pardon and say, even though the majority of your life was spent living under this lie, we now pardon you? Who pardons America for that? You know?
Nobody.
No, man.
Nobody.
You know, yeah. So anyway, man, and of course, Madeleine Albright, you know, I'm going to give shout out to her, you know, died last month, I think it was, not sure. Well, no, just last week. But, you know, she was the 64th Secretary of State, served under Clinton, but the first female to hold that position. And the thing is, she was like a refugee from Czechoslovakia. You know, and came here, her parents brought her here, you know. And again, man, it's just, how do people, that's why, you know, how do people just find that spark, you know, of self-awareness and just lay out a course that leads them to certain amazing accomplishments? Obama. You know, I guess we could turn to sports figures too, you know, but sports figures seems to be the cop-out for Black America. We don't study enough history to understand where so many other aspects of hope really lie, you know, and only a select few make it to professional sports. You know, the world of professionalism is so wide open for anybody who can dream beyond the course of that which is expected. Yeah. Anyway, man, that's it for me, man. Sorry we went a little bit over, you know. Thank you for letting me, you know, carry on.
What's the just a couple of things before we wrap it up. Abraham's last name, how do you spell it?
I'm kind of, I messed around and didn't turn the lights on before I sat down, and I'm trapped with wires, and I can't, I think it's B-O-L-D-E-N. If it needs
D-E-N.
To be corrected, I'll let you know. Yeah, but it
okay.
might be B-O-L-D-O-N. But I think it's,
okay.
let me see if I can, let me, give me a minute to squint, you know.
And that's just in case anybody's out there, you know, as I mentioned, as we do at our shows, but it was good to have a pen and paper or something handy with you. Now, we'd like to make sure that if you hear something, you want to take some notes or something like that, then, you know, you have that opportunity. So,
yeah, B-O-L-D-E-N, Abraham Bolden, B-O-L-D-E-N.
Yeah, there he is, right on. Okay.
Yeah, first appointed in 1961, born in 1937, and lives in Chicago, man.
Yeah, he's from East St. Louis.
On the south side.
Check that out.
Yeah, it lives on the south side. You're doing your backup research.
I just jumped in.
It lives on the south side, man. So, man, I might have crossed paths with some of his offspring and didn't even know it.
Yeah.
As it happens so often in my time, you know, like at church with a guy who was a Tuskegee Airman, didn't even know it. At church with a guy who played on the Negro Baseball League and didn't even know it. You know,
Wow. Man, yeah. We
were taught to keep our history obscured. We were never taught to celebrate it openly. And that's the thing that just gets under my craw, man, you know. Man. But anyway, we'll pick up next Monday on the Mayflower Compact. Because
yeah,
it's a hell of a story.
So we still have a few things to catch up on. You added to, actually, with the Mayflower Compact.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I'm still looking up. But it's cool though, you know, because that provides some further context to look at. You know, we're still looking at the Courageous Conversation About Race with Glenn Singleton's Courageous Conversations About Race, and I believe it's Neil Irving Painter History of White People 2010.
So
you know, that's again, for those people that are listening out there, whether it be the live shows or the recorded shows, I see Tanya Freedom's in the chat room tonight. What's good, Tanya?
Ah.
Tanya Freedom, thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. Thank you for your engagement in the chat room there. Thank you so much. So we definitely got some things to look at and to get ready for Monday's show. Before we go, did we want to follow up with anything about Saturday? Because we mentioned it Monday.
I'm working on it. It's either going to be postponed to the following Saturday or it's still on, but I'll know for sure tomorrow.
Okay.
So just, you know, everybody just check what we have available, you know, and it'll be posted if it's on for this Saturday. It'll be posted on Facebook, you know, and the other areas like the Greenhouse Effect, you know, website. And might even throw it in the Write Your Own Book Club since it's still up as well.
Yep.
You know, I'm aiming for Saturday, but as I mentioned to you, situations beyond my control might dictate that I wouldn't be available to be able to do it, you know, and I won't really know until tomorrow.
That's cool. You know, so basically, ladies and gentlemen, we got another another podcast or a show coming up on Saturdays. We're looking at Saturdays at 10 a.m. So just, you know, be on the lookout. Keep your eyes open on the Greenhouse Effect group page, the Facebook business page, or, you know, my page or Dad's page for further information. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly. Saturdays at 10
a.m.
Be on the lookout for that. And it will be this same format, Blog Talk Radio live on Saturdays with the same call in or engagement with the chat. Well, I'll be more of an EP on Saturdays. You know, I switch up a little bit, so we'll see how it goes.
That might be what you think.
That's
just what you thought in Write Your Own Book Club. Surprise.
With a title like Habits, man, I'm trying to stay all the way in the back, man. I'm trying to be Richard Pryor and The Wiz. You know, I'm trying to be all the way back there.
Richard Pryor and The Wiz. That's funny. All right, man. Well, I'm going to let you land this airplane and get out your way, man. Love you, son. Great show tonight. Dan.
Love you too. Hey, good show, man. That was all you, man. Thank you. Thank you for what you do and what you bring. I love the perspective, and I love our ability to be able to connect, you know. But that's what the show's about.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Tanya Freedom, for popping in. Always good to see your name out there.
Freedom! So this is the Greenhouse Effects radio show, ladies and gentlemen. Again, live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We're here. We try to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experiences, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. I'm Will. That's Bill over there. Again, live Mondays and Wednesdays. As always, we hope that you all stay safe, be blessed, be safe. And most importantly, be yourself, because everybody else is taken. All right, Daddy-O. I'll holler at
you
next time. Love you too.
All right.
Have a good night, ladies and gentlemen. Amen. That made me who I am.